This is a production from the Yak Podcasting Network. The home for your growing sonic map of local voices, united in their commitment to the best in podcasting.
Hey guys, this is Landon jumping in with a quick note before the show starts. We experienced a bit of a rite of passage as podcasters this week in that the computer decided to eat Jeremiah's end of the recording after we finished. It's still very much so listenable. I just wanted to give you guys a heads up that the audio quality is not really up to our normal standards. Hopefully this won't be an issue with any more episodes going forward, but like I said, it's still listenable, so enjoy. Capital of Texas, you're listening to the Austin Anthem Podcast. My name is Landon Cottom, and I am joined today by Jeremiah Bentley.
I'm Jeremiah Bentley.
Jeremiah, how's it going, man?
It's going pretty good. We've got a lot of good stuff going on. Had a great weekend. Had the chance to march in the MLK rally on Monday with the good folks from Transit for Austin, and I ran the 3M half marathon on Sunday, the day before.
Oh.
And the weirdest part of that was I had to run past Austin Beer Works at 7:30 in the morning and not go in.
I don't think they're open then anyway, so it probably worked out fine.
They were, but they had a guy handing out Fire Eagle on the side of the rope.
Oh.
It was 2 miles in, and that seemed like a lot. That seemed like a lot to finish. How about you?
I was in Santa Fe, New Mexico all weekend. I had never really been there, so it was a lot of fun. I went to the Meow Wolf Museum, and I kind of forgot about this, but Meow Wolf, if you guys don't know, it's this really bizarre experiential art exhibit, but they sponsor New Mexico United's kits, so they're the kit sponsor, and it says Meow Wolf on the front of the jerseys, and they look really cool, and they had them for sale at the museum, but they only had youth sizes left, or otherwise I might have bought one.
But
yeah.
I've seen them. They look really psychedelic. Do they look like that all the time, or is that like a special? Is that a special edition? It looks like a Pac-Man font kind of thing.
The font itself is kind of bizarre, but the kits are really kind of clean, classic. It's like black with yellow trim on it, and then the Meow Wolf font is in kind of crazy colors, and so it looks really looks really cool against the black background. But the kits themselves are really clean just without the sponsor, but then the sponsor has kind of that splash of color that makes it look really cool. So on today's episode, we have a really exciting interview to get to with, it's kind of crazy to even say that this is happening, but Mr. Alexi Lawless is our guest on today's show. So we will get to that interview a little bit later. The reason we had him on was because of the 1 year anniversary of the official MLS announcement of Austin FC as the 27th team. So, we thought it would be really cool to have Alexi on, and he agreed to do it. So you'll get to hear that here in a little bit, but first let's talk a little bit about the event itself. So Austin FC hosted, kind of an anniversary party for the 1 year anniversary. And Jeremiah, were you there? You weren't there, were you? You were there.
I was there. I think, and one of the things I thought was really cool about being there was the fact that, so we had, you know, the commissioner and Alexi and the circus came to town last year, but this year to have the speakers be, to have like Claudio and Josh Wolf on stage, like people actually represented the soccer organization, I thought was a really cool transition to show how we're moving from where we were to what we are. So that was one thing I really enjoyed out of it.
Yeah, I agree. And I had a lot of fun. You can tell maybe by the fact that I didn't remember if you were there or not. It's not because I was drunk or anything. It's just, it was kind of a hectic night. Like I was playing with the band, and so kind of focused on that and marched. We kind of had a march from, what's that bar called?
Little Woodrow's
across the street, which is where we all met before the original event to kind of set up the two guys, me and Faris, who were playing drums,
right,
and then the rest of the people that were chanting with us. And we walked over there, kind of marched over last year as well. And so we kind of recreated that and all met up at Little Woodrow's, marched across the street. We probably had more people all together at the event last year marching with us just because of the timing and everything of it. But the band had grown by like 3 or 4 times. So that was really cool to be able to march in and really play a show for a lot of people who, I don't know. It's just like I think last year nobody knew what we were doing and nobody knew what to expect. And this year, just like kind of the expectations have changed a little bit. And so to be able to walk in and play in front of that many people was a lot of fun. But yeah, we walked in, played, and then there wasn't a whole lot of fanfare to the rest of the night. Andy and Claudio and Josh all got up on stage. They said a few words, and then the rest of it was just kind of hanging out and talking to people. So, yeah, what was the night like for you, Jeremiah?
Well, I think one of the things that was really cool was you talked about the growth of the band. And so I ran into Chris Bills when we first got in there, and the very first thing he said to me was, like, you guys have gotten, you know, much bigger in terms of both size and volume. So that was noted by him and a lot of other people was the way that we had grown. I missed where the march started. So did we just block traffic going across 6th Street?
No, there's kind of like a little sidewalk area over there. So we just kind of waited for walk signals on and made it work that way. So, I mean, the tail end of the procession may have blocked some traffic at some point. I'm not really sure, but we tried to time it with traffic as best as possible.
I think it's very important to follow traffic safety laws, you know, no matter where you are, especially in downtown Austin, because it was a pretty heavy traffic time too, I think.
Yeah, it was 6:40 or so. So it was still pretty busy down there.
It was still rush hour. So no, it was good to go and just be able to connect and commune with all the people that we've grown to know and work with all throughout this process, and not worrying about producing an event and not worrying about the program and just having the time to have a couple beers and chat with people I hadn't seen in a while. You know, Bernie was down from Waco, which was cool because he was super involved early on and hadn't seen him in forever. And you know, some other old friends that I hadn't got to spend a lot of time with and kind of get together and reflect back on what the last year was really interesting and a great thing to be able to do.
Yeah, I saw a bunch of old faces that have kind of been involved for a long time. And then I also saw a bunch of new faces. So every time we have an event, it seems like you find new people and more people and different people from what you've seen at the last event, that's good news. And it's exactly what we need to happen. And so I was able to talk to quite a few different people, and I was actually trying to find new people who I didn't know just to kind of see what their experience was like, why they came down, and then just kind of, I don't know, share some more stories and experiences with them. And these three guys specifically that I met, all wearing Austin FC gear, were all super excited about the team and had never heard of Austin Anthem. And so I was just like, okay, well, yeah, if you're this into it, like, you should be involved with what we're doing. And so kind of talked to them a little bit about it. And I try not to be too salesy on stuff like that. I just told them all the cool stuff we're doing. They're like, yeah, that sounds fantastic. We're definitely going to get involved. And so hopefully they signed up and we'll see them at some more events in the future. But yeah, like I said, there wasn't a ton of fanfare or like much of a run of show to the whole event, but I thought it was really fun and really cool. And part of the reason being is that Josh Wolf, Claudio Arena, and Annie Lockney, and a lot of the other front staff people, mostly Josh and Claudio, they're just kind of milling about the crowd and just talking to people, whoever wanted to talk to them. They're just available to do that. So I thought that was great.
Yeah, it's cool to see him hang out. Saw him in a lot of people's Facebook photos and Twitter photos the next day and just kind of being part of the soccer crowd, which was awesome. And it's always good to see people in Austin FC stuff. You know, at one point in time, I think all of us, if we saw anybody in a shirt, it was somebody we knew. And it's really cool to like go out in the wild and just see people all around, all over the place, like doing that and, you know, not be that way, for it to be a bigger part of the community.
So in other Austin FC news, Phil West, our very own Phil West, wrote an article about kind of ticketing and how the sales process goes. So do you want to talk a little bit about that, Jeremiah?
Yeah, I'd be happy to do that. And it's weird because we don't have necessarily any perspective for the numbers, other than Andy seems very excited about how things are going. So, I mean, we've seen the first hard numbers on where things are going. So they said that sales have covered 6% of the 20,500 fans expected to fill the stadium. And we know that they started with the very highest dollars tickets first. So they haven't opened everything up to the general public yet, but what they have sold has been like premium stuff, and they must be really happy about how they're converting what they did, because I can't imagine that Andy would talk a lot about it or brag about it if they weren't.
Yeah. 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 We like you said, that those numbers mean nothing to us, but all we can judge is kind of like the attitude or the temperament of the Austin FC people talking about it, and they seem pretty thrilled with everything. So it's that 6% just means like what they've done so far, but they're kind of slowly working their way through it. So it's not like they're selling everything at one time, but Yeah, well, all signs point towards a full stadium year one.
Yeah, there's a good quote from here in it, so I'll just read it from it. It says, "The trajectory of sales has once again validated Austin's love of Major League sports." This is from Andy. It says, "The last 12 months have produced so much positivity. We're incredibly fortunate there have been so much support for the team. Perhaps our early success has exceeded the marketplace's expectations." So, and I'd say things are going good.
Yeah. All right. What else in Austin FC news? So there's a few more kind of general stadium stuff that has come out. There's been some photos on Twitter that may or may not have been supposed to be shared with the public by people who have bought season tickets, but kind of give us some more looks that haven't really been made public yet, just kind of about what the seats look like or what the more developed stadium renderings look like. I wasn't kidding myself. I knew I wasn't going to be able to afford it.
Yeah, I guess if you did, you can go in and into SeatGeek and see like a 3D virtual rendering of exactly what the seats that you're looking at are like. So some people have posted some of those. I know that we kind of got the first look at the entire West Side stand from the East Side from somebody on Twitter. We've seen some basic pricing information, you know, just sort of at a general level, not particularly like very specific, but pricey is what it is. And it makes me feel good about my $50 deposit and not making a $100 one because I would not be buying those seats.
Yeah. So I've seen some talk on Twitter about people kind of being upset with how expensive these seats are and comparing them, like these premium seats, like these super premium ones that are being offered right now. And people comparing them to like Houston or Dallas and saying like, oh, well, I could get this for this much in Dallas. But from what Lochnane has said, like that's not really a fair comparison. Is that right?
Right. He just said that there's no current comparison in MLS in Texas. So they talked about more of a comparison to Bank of California, which totally makes sense given everything we know about that stadium and the design and sort of the model they're trying to build.
Which, yeah, and he's talking not just about price, but in like the quality of the seat you're buying or like what services you get in buying that seat. So I think it seems like if you have that money, you'll get your money's worth. I think it would be cool to have more of the kind of the German model and make sure like all seats are affordable or whatever. But this is America. And so rich people get special things, and that's just kind of how it is, especially in a situation where, yeah, just where there's a lot of demand for it. And so
when you're the only game in town, you can kind of charge people whatever the market will get. So it's just sort of an unfortunate reality of it. But
yeah.
we'll be loud in the standing section.
They seem to still be holding their line that that the vast majority of the stadium, as far as like average single game tickets, will still be fairly affordable. So, and then also we'll see whenever kind of the general seating prices get released. But, we haven't seen any signs or heard any whispers that like supporter section are going to be super expensive or anything like that. So we'll wait and see. But, do we know anything about kind of the timeline of when normal folk should start getting calls or emails?
So I've still heard this spring on that. I don't think we have anything more specific than that. So I think they've gone from like super premium to basic premium as far as the folks they've reached out to. But I think the next – I heard March at one point in time, but I don't know if that was a rumor or based in some –
Yeah, I don't think I don't know. We hear a lot of rumors. Some of them are worth more than others. But I haven't heard anything concrete, even in rumor town, as far as like when normal people will start to pick seats and stuff like that. So, I've also heard and seen from people getting nervous that they haven't been called yet or whatever. So, I'd like look down at your pants. Are they fancy? How fancy? Are they very, very fancy? Okay, you probably should have gotten a call by now. If they are not that fancy, then just wait with the rest of us and you'll get called sometime in the next 2 to 4 months, probably.
Probably, yeah. And I guess answer phone calls from Lockhart, because apparently I've heard a lot of people say...
Is that what it is?
Yeah, apparently there's a lot of people who said that the ticking numbers is a number in Lockhart. So whether you know somebody in Lockhart or not, maybe pick the phone up and check it out. The one other number I have seen that most of the seats are going to be priced at $48 a match or less is something they've been super consistent about, like all the way back to... even before the city council vote, when people were asking about the affordability and their guarantee of making sure that people could still get seats at a decent price. So they haven't wavered on that despite the demands. I mean, that's a positive note.
Yeah. So in other MLS news, we've now seen Nashville SC release their inaugural MLS kits. What did you think about these kits, Jeremiah?
Yeah, they're pretty generic. They're not great. Was it? Remember, Brock wanted to do like cleats up on, like sort of jersey fashion.
Yeah, we're kind of test running new segments for the podcast, yeah. And Brock wanted to do a cleats up segment where I think maybe this Nashville jersey might have made that one.
It might have made it, like the local news thing with like the cranky guy at the end that sort of complains about things. That could be
you
Brock.
Know what
in the Nashville
grinds
jersey.
My gears? Yeah. I think a lot of people overreact to everything like design
or
jersey
everything.
Related.
Everything.
Just everything, period.
People overreact
yeah.
on Twitter, yeah.
So I usually I honestly like a really clean, simple kit. My favorite Premier League jerseys historically are usually like Liverpool, Chelsea, Southampton, just something, Crystal Palace, just like hoops or just a solid color. I really like jerseys like that. But my problem with this one is that you can buy this exact jersey. If you just take the sponsor and the crest off, you can probably buy this exact jersey just like at a generic soccer supply store. They sell Adidas training tops like this. And so that's my biggest beef with it. Is like, I don't mind a simple kit. I kind of like, I prefer a clean, simple kit, but the fact that they just make Adidas just sells training tops that look almost exactly like this. That's where I kind of have a problem with it, is that they didn't go any different off of kind of their stock thing that they already sell.
Yeah. I mean, you don't really want to look like your over 50 men's league team that might be playing out in the park or whatever for your MLS franchise. But I think one thing that's of interest to us that I don't know is like how much control does the club really have over what comes out, you know, or is that an Adidas call? Is that, you know, where is that decision made? You know, are there parameters they have to follow? And I don't know enough about that design to know that. So maybe the fall doesn't live in Nashville.
I've heard different things saying that, it's not Adidas' fault. The clubs have control over this. And then I've heard the complete opposite as well. So who knows whose fault it is. But I honestly would like to see in the future at some point doing it kind of like other leagues where a team itself negotiates their jersey deals, which in single entity MLS, maybe that will never happen. But it would be really cool if Nashville could go with Adidas and Inter Miami decided to go with Nike or whatever, and they could all kind of negotiate their own things and kind of have more say in their design and how jerseys are released. I don't know if that'll ever happen in MLS, but that's what I would really like to see. I'm hoping there will be enough grumbling and enough discontentment with these really boring jerseys we've seen the last 2 years in MLS by the time Austin starts that maybe there will be some more adventurous stuff coming out by then.
Hopefully so. And I think our color scheme lends itself to that a little bit because it's pretty unique. Like it would be hard to do that Verde in any super generic kind of way, I think. But maybe Adidas will surprise me.
Don't challenge them like that, Jeremiah.
Sorry.
I think we should go to that that interview with Mr. Alexi Lawless. What do you think, Jeremiah?
I think that sounds like a great thing. I think people are probably tired of hearing us talk for a bit.
We'll cut to that, and we'll be back after that with kind of our reaction to it, and then some other updates as well. So we'll see you then. Alexi, thanks for joining me.
Greetings. We were just speaking off air that it's been now over a year and a day or so since I saw you guys back there at the big announcement. I can't believe it's just flown by. Pleasure to be with you and to speak with you again. And the work continues on and off the field. And it's amazing from afar to see what's going on. So I can't imagine what it's like there from an in-person perspective.
Yeah, it's been a wild ride. So I want to talk to you about the announcement last year, but first I wanted to maybe take a look to the past. So here in Austin, we're building a beautiful stadium up at McCalla Place, along with a multi-million dollar training facility that will be started later on. And then several other teams in the league are doing the same thing. So I want to go back 25 years to the days of baggy jerseys and training in parking lots and playing in empty NFL stadiums. So in 96, you played the first ever MLS season with the New England Revolution. Can you talk a little bit about how facilities have changed and just how the league overall has changed since those early days?
Yeah, I mean, it is night and day, and it warms the cockles of my redheaded heart to be able to see it. There is a whole generation that grows up now looking at not just Major League Soccer, but soccer in the United States and North America, for that matter, in a completely different way, in a completely different context than I did. And that's a good thing. That's not a bad thing. I don't need them to revere or even, to be quite honest with you, know what went on. So, but you mentioned, you know, some things. So I think about, for example, training facilities that are now so much a part of these new teams that come in, and a huge recruiting tool, but also a practical thing that you need. And from a business perspective, they can be very, very advantageous. And so training in the parking lot of the Rose Bowl, I'm talking to you from Los Angeles right now, training in the parking lot of the Rose Bowl. The Rose Bowl parking lot, for people who don't know, is actually grass. And so, yes, it was grass, but it was also a parking lot up in New England, where I started out with the Revolution, just going from Brandeis University to Babson University, and basically any kind of plot of land. But there was no facilities to speak of. That was, I mean, the day that the Crew Stadium was put into action was a monumental day, just from a stadium perspective. But now you have training facilities. It is wonderful. It is amazing how far we have come in a relatively short period of time. But it also puts the onus and the pressure on someone like Austin and others who are coming into the league to live up to now a much higher standard, not just your stadium, obviously, which is a huge component, but also the training facility, the actual brand, the way that you have a launch party, or all those different things. You're being judged at a much higher level right now, and it's a good thing. That competition is a good thing.
And then now that Atlanta and LAFC have shown the success they've had in their opening years, there's pressure to have a product on the pitch as well.
There is pressure, but I think there is no league in the world that bends over backwards or accommodates in the way that MLS does. That gives you the opportunity to be successful right away. And that's that's why when, you know, I talk about, I don't know, Cincinnati or something, where it was a complete disaster on the field, they can very quickly turn that around. But also, when I'm assessing them, they are in a league that fundamentally is with the manufactured parity that gives you an opportunity to compete right away. And so when a team like Atlanta comes in, or LAFC comes in, and right off the bat, there's no soft launch, they come in and they compete right away, kudos to them for being able to do that. And shame on the teams that don't do that. And don't ask me as a purveyor of opinion or anything to be easy on you, or go easy on you because it's a long-term process. No, MLS enables you to compete right away. And so I expect you to at least be competitive. I'm not asking you to win MLS Cup. I'm not even necessarily asking you to make the playoffs right away, but you got to be competitive. And someone like Cincinnati wasn't competitive in that first year.
Yeah. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see, but I like the signs we're seeing so far here in Austin.
Yeah, you got some, because you have some good leadership already. I mean, look, you guys are obviously waiting with bated breath as the news leaks out, and it is a slow trickle right now. But when you actually have some human beings to look to, whether it's a Claudio Reyna, a Josh Wolf, these types of folks that have been there, done that, I mean, that's a good thing. And, you know, you're going to have to trust them to make the decisions. And while they have, and I told you this a year ago, while it seems like you have a long time and a ramp to hit the ground running when the first whistle blows, it's going to go very, very quickly, which is, you know, a case in point. We're talking a year later and it has gone like that. And very, very quickly, you are going to be watching your Austin team in your brand new stadium with that wonderful training facility, with the brand and all the love and the passion that comes with it. That whistle is going to blow, and the team has to be ready to hit the ground running. Like I said, not to win every single game, but to be competitive and live up to what's happening other places, but I think also to live up to what's happening in Austin and the expectations that you and others have.
Yeah, so let's jump back to last year. So January 15th, 2019 was the year of the official MLS announcement of Austin FC as the 27th team. So you emceed this event, as our listeners will know. I don't believe you'd ever done one of those announcements before, had you?
I've done a few of them. I did Atlanta.
Okay, I didn't realize
that. I'm on the circuit, if you will. And yeah. But each one's different. That's what's amazing to me. That's what's fun for me. And, look, we'll get into, at times, criticizing and making fun and taking shots at different people along the way. Ultimately, this is all good. And I love, even though I was critical of Cincinnati a couple seconds ago, I love what they are doing. I love that they are in. It's okay to be critical. I think I'm being fair when I'm doing it. But, I had done something with Atlanta. They came to me and said, would you like to do this in Austin? And I was there. I was on the plane and ready to go. And I had a blast. And it was interesting, too, to be there with Don Garber, the commissioner of Major League Soccer. And immediately after the event, he turned to me, and we've done a bunch of events over the years together. And he turned to me and said, hey, this was really, really special. And it was unique. And he had an absolute blast at the event, as we all did, because you wanted to represent who you are as people, who the city is, and give a message, not just externally, because we know this is kind of an advertisement type of moment, but also internally, everybody to come together that's worked so hard and with plenty of work to go. So it was an absolute privilege and pleasure to be there and to be play a small part of the history that ultimately you and yours are all going to take and go with where you feel is appropriate.
That's good to hear. I think we all wanted to believe that everyone on stage was having a good time. It looked like they were. But also some of the people out in the crowd with us, there's city council members who worked really hard to get the stadium deal passed, which without any of that, none of this would have happened. And so to see the smiles on their faces and then all of the supporters and all the work that we had put into certain things at that point. So yeah, it really was just a really celebratory atmosphere. And there are people on Twitter and online talking trash like they always do and always will. But being in that building and in that room really did feel like a special moment.
Well, you mentioned politicians and government, which are so important nowadays. And it's really, really hard nowadays in this era to get any type of public funding. And so, the fact that there is no public funding, the fact that they are, using their own money, I actually think that's a really good thing. And I think, when you are a politician or when you're in charge of what amounts to our money as representatives, you want to be frugal and you want to be responsible with what you're doing. And ultimately, while it might be a passion that we have, it's still just sports, but it can do great things. And I think that politicians, whether they were there then or whether they supported the whole thing at the beginning, I think that they will come around. The ones that have championed it deserve credit, but they also recognize that this can be something that they can celebrate without draining the resources of the community that obviously every community needs to make sure that it goes as far as possible going forward. So it was fun to see not just the quote unquote soccer people out there, but also the people that I think are going to be soccer people recognize that even if they haven't watched people kick a ball around in the form of soccer, this can be something that's representative of the community, representative of the city, and ultimately representative of the people and the personality and the character. And everyone's different.
Yeah, so let's jump to a moment a bit later on in 2019. So on, I think it was June 13th, Austin FC started taking deposits for season tickets. And they took, I think it was 30,000 seat deposits in the first 24 hours. And so that was a pretty exciting moment for us. And that day, I believe you were in France for the Women's World Cup. But what you posted one of your How May I Enlighten You tweets where you answer questions from Twitter followers. And one of our Austin Anthem org team members, Brock Williams, asked what your thoughts were on Austin FC's seat deposits. And your response was this, quote, "It's like winning 13-0 versus Thailand. Impressive, but expected. Take a bow and move on because there's a lot more work to be done and you haven't really done anything yet."
Yeah.
So I think all of people in Austin, the first instinct is to maybe bristle at the sentiment that we hadn't done anything yet. But we understood what you're saying, and I think most of us agree with you. Like, we know that the road
is mostly ahead of us still, and there's still a lot to be done. So what are your thoughts on what Austin has done since last January, and what do you think still needs to be done in order for us to call this a success?
Well, you know, first off, I know you are much more aware than maybe others of my support over the years. So I'm also, while I've given you plenty of compliments as to what you have done as a city and what I think you're going to do as a soccer city or an MLS city in this case, I'm also there not here to blow smoke up anybody's, you know what. I'm here to call it like I see it.
And can always count on you for that.
Exactly. And, you know, I have seen at times where people get a little too big for their britches, and a dose of reality is good. A dose of reality is good in any type of setting, including on the field and off the field, and knowing when to kick somebody in the ass as opposed to put your arm around them. And so while it's wonderful, the amount, I mean, that's an incredible number, and it shows ambition, and it shows that that people recognize that this is something they want to be involved with. But anybody that's ever been in a front office recognizes that, you know, deposits are one thing and then actually selling it is another thing. I have no doubt that they are going to kick ass when it comes to the business of Austin, and they will sell the seats. It'll be wonderful. They'll make the money that they have. They'll have the sponsorships and the partnerships, and not just fly by night type of stuff, but long term real partnerships and relationships, if you will, with people that are local and with people that are national, because we will see the opportunity that that exists there. But look, people in the front office there and people outside don't need me necessarily to remind them, but it's good to be reminded every once in a while that there's still plenty of work to do. And guess what? It's not going to always be great. It's not going to always go perfectly. There are going to be challenges. There are going to be pitfalls. There are going to be stumbles along the way. And that's okay. This is still a labor of love, but it is still a labor, and it requires a steadfast approach each and every day. And that comes from the leadership. I'm not in there day to day, so I don't know what that is all about. But from the outside, I was reading an article earlier today, talking about Andy and the ticket sales that are going on there, and obviously they're very bullish, as they should be. But then you talk about the training facility and that type of stuff. I think there's a lot of wonderful stories to tell right now. And that moment when you look into the stadium and it's sold out and you've made your money and you're making more money, there's more opportunities that are out there, and you have a good product that you are putting on the field, that's the real money. That's that sweet spot that you are trying to get to. But that doesn't come without a tremendous amount of hard work. And I was just trying to make sure that while you can be optimistic, you have to be cautiously optimistic, and you always have to be humble in your approach. As much as I can say, be humble.
Yeah, I think just with the excitement that we have right now, I think they can more or less coast through that first season as far as filling the stadium. But I think you're right. I think building that product on the field, and then also the product of the game day experience, because yeah, Austin is not lacking entertainment in the city. So I think it needs to be a place where people like to go. They like to spend the day, even if the team isn't great, if just the stadium atmosphere is good. I think that's how they'll get people to keep coming back in season 3 and 4 and so on. So earlier on, you mentioned Claudio Reyna and Josh Wolf. So you and Josh probably just missed each other on the national team, but you and Claudio had some crossover, right?
Yeah, I played with Claudio. I've known him for years. Josh, I played against. I wasn't with him on the national team. You're right. We just missed playing with each other on the national team, but I played against him a bunch of times. And, both really, really smart guys, guys that have had some really interesting and unique experiences in terms of what they have done. But it's as you can imagine, it is a different animal, and something very interesting, but also ripe with opportunity to do, in this case, an expansion team in Major League Soccer. The good part is there is an incredible template, an incredible history now, and a wealth of knowledge and a sharing of best practices out there as to what you should do and what you shouldn't do. And look, it's not cookie cutter. You can't just say just because it worked in Atlanta, it's going to work in Austin. And just because it worked in Minnesota is going to work here. That's not necessarily the case, but there are some things that you can do when you're talking about, actual on the field. And obviously this is from a competitive side. These guys are smart in that they know what the league is and what the league isn't. They know where they stand in, at least the initial pecking order of markets. And so how do they approach it? Do they come in big and try to compete with the big boys? Do they do a Sporting KC type of approach? How important is the youth setup? And I don't know, you would know much more about the actual youth setup there in terms of what the talent is. I believe there's talent all across the United States, and I don't have any reason to believe that Austin should be any different. So I'm sure that there are good soccer players that you have to bring into that family and make sure that you are nurturing and fostering a generation locally and give them a pathway to that. If that's something you want to do, maybe it's not something you want to do, but if you're going to do it, you know, that's a huge component going forward that I'm sure Claudio will be focused on. And Josh is going to have to deal with a bunch of players that are being thrown together that have never played before. And he's going to have to get them up to speed as quickly as possible. He's also going to have to implement right from the start what this team wants to be. And that's, I think, probably the most fascinating but also difficult part of his job is that, and I talked about opportunity, he gets to say, this is how Austin is going to play. This is our player profile. This is our strategy when we go out. This is the, for lack of a better phrase, the Austin way. And I don't know what that ultimately means. He gets to kind of choose it with Claudio. And yes, they're going to tweak it here or there as they go forward, but it's easier said than done, especially when you're starting from scratch. But starting from scratch can be the place to do it because you get that blank slate and you can do whatever you want going forward. Can't play with 12 people, but you can figure out a way to play 11 and define it and articulate it both privately and publicly so that everybody understands that this is how we're going to look.
I got a chance to talk to Claudio last night at the event, and I realized like, oh, he knows Alexi. And so I was like, hey, I'm going to talk to Alexi tomorrow. Do you have any embarrassing stories you can tell me? And unfortunately he couldn't think of anything good. He did say like, oh, everyone knows about the slushy thing. And I was like, wait, what are you talking about? And he's like, yeah, he likes to get slushies from 7-Eleven. I was like, I didn't know about that, but apparently he thought everyone knew.
Well, yeah. I mean, I am a lifelong fan of the Slurpee. I'm a traditionalist. And so it's either cherry or cola, no mixing. I don't believe in any of the newfangled, flavors and stuff like that. So yeah, it is the nectar of the gods as far as I'm concerned. And anybody that has ever played with me realizes very quick that while it certainly would never appear on any training table, it was part of my weekly diet for better or worse. So look, Claudio, you're not relying on him to kick the ball. What you are relying on Claudio to do is to recognize and to have the smarts and the intelligence, and I believe that he does, to understand what this team wants to look like. And it's going to be in his image. He has an idea of what good soccer is, and we all have different ideas, but he's been given the job, and therefore the onus is on him to figure it out. And then he has Josh to go out there and implement that on a day-to-day basis. And you're talking about one of the great players in American men's soccer history, and a guy that to a certain extent was beyond his years and almost a man out of time, in that he was so good and so smooth, and he glided on the field, and he's just used that ability to see soccer and to understand soccer and to feel soccer into the work in the front offices that he has done. But he's got his work cut out for him, and just like everybody else, it comes down to results on the field, and that you are proud and you are excited about the product that is being put out there week in and week out that represents you and obviously represents your city.
So since we are a supporters group, I wanted to ask you a little bit about fan culture in MLS. Mm-hmm. So what are some of the examples of supporter culture getting it right around the league? And then what are some parts of supporter culture here in the U.S. that you feel like are a detriment to the league?
It's interesting because I think the supporters culture, and it's not just limited to MLS. I know we're talking MLS right now, obviously, as it applies to Austin, but just the American soccer supporter culture and what it is. It's so wonderful. I argue that it is more educated and more passionate because it has had to be relative to supporters groups around the world. And, you know, sometimes people fight me on that, but because you are a supporters group from a country where soccer is not king, because you are a supporters group in a country where you are competing from a sporting perspective with all these other leagues and sports, you've had to at times suffer in silence or suffer in solitary At times you have had to fight with one hand behind your back. At times you have had to fight one man or woman down, or many men and women down. And I'm not talking about literal fighting, but I'm talking about, you know, fighting for
cultural relevance. Sport. Maybe.
Yeah, exactly. For cultural relevance. I think that's wonderful. The interesting thing is each supporters group and therefore culture represents that particular market in a unique way. And so when I go to Cascadia and I go to Portland or I go to Seattle, it's done in a very different way. And what I love about it is that that ownership very, very quickly comes apparent, and it manifests in the things that they do. Supporters groups sometimes take themselves too seriously, but that's not necessarily a bad thing. And it comes once again from this ownership, and it also comes from this overall, and I'm part of this, this overall insecurity that we have as an American soccer culture and this inferiority complex that we have. But I'm telling you right now, if there's one thing right now that we have over any other sport in the United States, it is the supporters culture. It is unique. It is incredibly important. And I think it is one of the few things that other leagues and other sports in the United States look at as something that they would love to have and something that they would love to be able to cultivate. And so I think that if there is ever going to be something that drives this league and this sport forward, I think it's going to come from the supporters culture. To answer your question as to, you know, bad things, look, there's things that it, over the years I have maybe disagreed with, and whether it's, you know, I don't know, a cause or signage. You know, we got into the whole signage thing last year and the stuff that was going over there. We can agree to disagree, but ultimately it's not what I want. It's what you want. It's how you want to represent not just your city, not just your team, but you as a group that is passionate and supportive and loyal through this team. And so you get to decide it. And that's the great thing. You get to decide what, not just what your group is going to be, but ultimately, because you are going to in many ways define what this team is. Not on the field. I talked about what Claudio is going to do from a stylistic perspective. You will have an effect and an impact, but off the field, Austin is going to be much more representative of who you are as a supporters group than how the team is playing out of the back or how the team crosses the ball or anything like that. That's the real heart. That's the real family part of it, for better and worse, because we all know families are incredibly dysfunctional. I don't know about yours, but we all have dysfunctional families. And so it is la cosa nostra. It's our thing. And we can scream and yell from the inside, but we protect ourselves as a group and ultimately as a family from things coming from the outside. And that's the wonderful thing that I love. And I'm just a talking head on the outside, and I may agree or disagree at different times, but it's up to you how you want to go about your supporters group business, I guess, if you will.
Well, I don't want to take up too much of your time, but I just, thanks for all you do for American soccer, Alexia. And I know you like to play devil's advocate, and I don't always necessarily agree with you, but I do really appreciate your ability to start a conversation and maybe explore a topic a little bit deeper that most people may see as cut and dry. So yeah, thanks for doing that, and thank you for your time.
Well, get in line as far as disagreeing with me. I was with Grant Wall doing a podcast yesterday, and it inevitably somebody will say, well, I don't always agree with what you say, but, and I actually love it. It's an incredible compliment, and I'm very, very thankful and happy that someone like you and so many others, well, as we've said before, you don't have to agree with me, but we have this discussion. We have what I think is a real needed type of debate going forward. We're going to have, you know, more discussion and at times criticism and debate and agreeing and disagreeing with what's going on the field, off the field, with your team, with what's happening in Austin. And that's okay. That nurtures and that drives competition. That's all a good thing. And to be quite honest with you, it makes it that much more interesting, and we don't have enough of it. And, you know, my job is to go out there and to talk about and to give my opinion. My job is not to have that opinion necessarily be something that anybody agrees with. And that's okay. But I love the fact that you approach me and others with respect, because we can agree to disagree, but we can also do it in a cordial and a familial and a respectful way. And so I really appreciate that.
Yeah. Thanks for taking the time, Alexi.
All righty.
Mr. Alexi Lawless, everyone. We want to thank Alexi again for taking the time
taking the time to do something like this. I think a lot of people have a lot of opinions about him. But I think one thing that nobody can deny is that he loves American soccer and really carries that flag and waves that flag. He just wants it to grow and wants to be the best thing he can. And I think he proves that by coming on shows like ours. You may see it as like a self-promotional thing, but trust me, we don't have enough listeners for that to be any type of self-promotion for him. So he does it because he loves American soccer and he really wants to see it succeed.
I think it was cool. I mean, the amount of time he gave you and that really came through. I mean, on Twitter, he's kind of an agitator, or, you know, whatever. He seems to be controversial sort of for the sake of it sometimes, or overly controversial, make a point. But he didn't do any of that really throughout the interview. He was just Alexi, who loves American soccer and wants to see succeed and has a lot of opinions and seems to think a lot of what we have going on in Austin. So I thought it was cool that he did 25 minutes, I think, and that he was real and thoughtful, you know, and not just like a string of catchphrases out of the whole interview, which I really enjoyed. So, you know, we got to know him a little bit last year at the event. What do you call it? The zero anniversary?
Yeah, the inaugural announcement. I don't know. The MLS announcement.
The actual announcement. We got to know a little bit at the actual announcement. He talked about everybody being there. That was really cool to know that. I've never sat down and watched one of these, so only had my perspective of what I saw during the day, and it seemed like everybody really enjoyed themselves. It was good to know that was real.
Yeah, I agree. Like after that event, we were all talking about it, and we're like, it looked like we know Adler was having a great time, but it looked like Alexi and Don Garber were like really into it and like really loving it. And so to hear Alexi say that unprompted, like to bring that up, like, okay, maybe that was the case then. Cause I actually have watched a few of the other ones and, to varying degree, like the moods are a little bit different. They're in different kinds of rooms and different kind of atmospheres. So it's hard. It's not an apples to apples comparison, but, it was really cool to hear that they all thought it was a cool event too.
And so you're saying nobody throws a soccer launch party like Austin throws a soccer launch party then, right?
Exactly. So one of the things that Alexi mentioned is that there's pressure to be competitive from day one. So we've got a lot of good things going for us as far as just like ticket sales, fan culture being built in the city. But yeah, one thing that's still yet to be proven is if we're going to actually be good at soccer. And so, like he said, there's no excuse not to be good in this league. It's a league that manufactures parity with the salary cap restrictions and things like that. So yeah, it's not an impossible thing to be good from day one. So, I have faith in Claudio and Josh to be able to do that. It's just a matter of executing at this point. So hopefully that will be the case.
Yes. Yeah, so it's very important for us to not be Cincinnati, which I think came through loud and clear. I mean, I think I've seen this on Twitter before too. Yeah. He does not seem to be a giant fan of the manufactured parody and the whole MLS model, but to the other side of that, then that does take all the excuses away to not be, you know, Atlanta or somebody else like that, or LAFC and be successful from the start, because you've got every chance there. And so it really comes down to the system you build, you know, your coaching style, the way your sporting director brings in players, you know, all those things are really democratized in the way we do it. And so that it's incumbent upon the front office staff that we have to be able to do that. And they seem to be off to a good start.
Yeah. Another thing he talked about is how American soccer culture is kind of a different beast in the U.S. compared to other soccer cultures, but also compared to just other fan cultures for different sports in the United States. So I agree with him. I think we do kind of have a bit of a chip on our shoulder as American soccer fans, and feel the need to prove our cultural relevance and to kind of prove our knowledge. So do you feel that, Jeremiah? Do you think that's the case for you?
Yeah, I do, because you're just part of this little club or whatever. And I think there's a bond that you get out of being a fan of a sport that's not the most popular sport, and especially a fan being an MLS fan. So it's even more exclusive than being like a Premier League fan. So I think it's something that's just sort of ingrained on you as a soccer fan, is building that out and really being an evangelist for the sport. It's pretty easy growing up in Texas. Everybody's born being an American football fan. And so you never have to prove that out. You know, you never have to make your case for it. You know, I can think about just even like in European soccer, you know, being able to explain the difference between the Champions League and the Premier League and then all the cups and whatever like that. Like, you develop a deep knowledge and passion for it. And I think it sort of gives you a chip on your shoulder, which I think, you know, as this becomes more mainstream and more popular, like, hopefully we'll be able to build upon that, and it'll put us at an advantage over fans of another sport that's been more established, because we've had to prove ourselves, and then we'll want to continue building that and continue maintaining it.
Yeah, I think that there's also kind of American sports really have this statistics-driven type mentality to them. And so I think there's kind of a tendency for American fans to be a little bit nerdy about stuff like that, more so than things have traditionally been in Europe. And so I think that's part of it. But I also think that there's kind of this weird, like a weird fraternity or like familial type atmosphere within MLS, just because the league is young and the league is growing. And there's kind of this this desire and this want for the league to continue growing. So an example being Chicharito just signed for LA Galaxy. He was someone that a lot of people in Austin would have really, really liked to see get signed by Austin FC if it were to happen a year later. But at the same time, I'm like maybe upset that we didn't get Chicharito, but I'm also very excited that he's coming to our league. And I don't know that that would be the case in England. So, Jeremiah, you're a Liverpool fan. If a huge star from another, say, Kylian Mbappe, Liverpool wants to sign Kylian Mbappe. Oh, it doesn't work out, and Tottenham signs him. Would you feel that same feeling?
No, it's no, not at all, right? I mean, no, it's completely different. I mean, because you really, we're pulling. I mean, I don't want to be like an Aggie or anything here, but like, we're pulling for the league at this point overall. Like, the more that more players we can bring in, you know, to MLS, and the, you know, the stronger the league is, the more that builds upon itself. And it is a unique thing. And every individual star is more important and is a bigger deal, because we don't have as many, you know, and our best players are ones that we've built up through the system, and they aren't necessarily the big names from somewhere else. And so they don't tend to get the same kind of attention. So I think when we would talk about like the CONCACAF Champions League, like I'd be happy for any MLS team to win that. Right. It's not like, because I'm an Austin fan, I don't want Dallas to be competitive for Houston. Right. I just want the league to do well overall.
Yeah. And hopefully that's a thing that, like you said, is in our benefit going forward. So one of the last points me and Alexi talked about was soccer culture. Just kind of continuing on that point of soccer culture is that a city's fan culture kind of gets to decide what that means. We get to choose what it is for us. And that's a thing I was really pretty concerned with early on, not because of any signs I had seen, just because I was afraid that whatever soccer culture developed, or however all these different soccer cultures came together in Austin, wasn't going to be something that felt like the city to me. And I've just, those fears have been proven wrong so far. And I think it's just really a really cool thing to be a part of, that we get to decide what soccer culture means in this city. Not entirely, because there's a lot of people coming from different backgrounds and fans of different teams and things like that. But as far as the most visible soccer culture that's going to be in town a year from now, we're kind of building that, and it's the people of Austin building that. So it really is the people and the fans who are deciding what that culture looks like. And I think that's something that soccer has over other American sports, is that other sports are very, very, it's kind of like the culture is a thing you consume. You go to the stadium and you just consume the experience that has been provided for you. Soccer is a different thing. You create the culture, you create the experience you have in the stadium. And I think that's a thing that's going to draw in a lot of these neutral or non-soccer fans to this game day experience. And people who haven't really been paying attention to what's happening in other MLS cities is that we're bringing in not just soccer fans, but but people who just are attracted to this experience because it doesn't exist in other American sports currently.
Yeah, and you tried to pin him down a little bit on bad soccer culture, and he managed to avoid that question. I don't think he gave an answer at all. He kind of vaguely made an Iron Front reference and then put in no specific way. But to your point just a minute ago about MLS being a young league and what that means already pulling for it, I mean, that's, we've talked about this many times. Like, the one of the most rewarding parts of the Anthem experience is being the young, well, not the youngest now, but one of the youngest teams in a young league, and the chance to kind of, to borrow the term of the club, to put down roots and really establish what this is going to look like going forward and really make it inclusive of everything about Austin.
Yeah, I agree. Okay, so before we finish up, let's go through some Austin Anthem news and updates. Jeremiah, go.
Go, okay. All right, Painting with a Twist on February 16th at 2 p.m. It's from 2 to 4. This may surprise nobody, but we will get a group of people together to paint in a grackle. I believe it's a bring your own wine or White Claw or whatever you might be interested in.
And snacks, I believe, as well.
Yes, you should probably have snacks with your wine and White Claw. And Natalie Simsky and the women's group is organizing that, and you can sign up for it on the Anthem store. I don't think you can bring like little kids because you don't need them around paint, but you know, feel free to come as yourself. Feel free to come with a guest. You know, we're gonna have a lot of people there, and we're gonna have a lot of fun, and we may do a live podcast from there depending upon how that all works out.
Yeah, so, Natalie showed us the kind of like the reference painting that we're gonna be doing that day. It looks real cool, so I'm pretty excited about it.
Yeah, and that's the only event we have right now on the books for sure. We've got stuff coming throughout the spring and through the whole year. Zanate Musical Collective, our Murga, which is pretty awesome and has done some great work at Fourth Tap, and then at the event on the 15th, is currently taking a little bit of a winter break, but there's a couple practices scheduled in February, and then I believe in March, the plan, when the weather gets better, on March, the plan is to get back on the regular weekly practice schedule. So you can sign up at murga@austinanthem.org to get more information and connect with that group. And get in early on a band that's doing a lot of great work too.
Yeah, we'll throw another link to that in the show notes as well.
Always, it's time to renew. If you need a flag, some other good merch, sign up for it. I think we've got a few. No, we don't have anything. I guess, but December is the last time we put new stuff in the store.
Yeah, but if you haven't checked on it, there's still some really cool stuff. And yeah. Ryan Riggins does all of the initial designs, and then our merch team does a really good job of picking out stuff that's not just cheap stuff that we're sticking grackles to. It's all really quality stuff. I'm actually wearing my hoodie right now, and I absolutely love it.
Awesome. And if there's anything you would like that you don't see in the store, we're always taking suggestions all the time. So drop us a note and let us know about that. We've seen pickup on the Facebook group, which I think we managed to rename between the recording of the episode and the release of the episode last time.
Yes, we did.
So what used to be the Austin Anthem Supporters Social, I'm just going to do this from memory, is now the Grackle Nest?
I'm opening it right now. I think that's right, but let me double check and confirm this.
But yeah, that group and then the Austin FC Reddit, like, traffic is picking up, which makes sense because there's more things going on. But that's been really cool way for people.
Yes, it is. It is Grackle Nest for Austin Anthem, so the Austin Anthem is still in the title. But yeah, the Grackle Nest is what that group has been renamed to.
And they got a bunch of good reports from Tony's trip to London and Liverpool, I think, over the weekend. So the Grackle goes everywhere. The Grackle spent a lot of time at Premier League games. I think that about wraps it up.
Yeah, one more Austin FC adjacent plug. Matthew McConaughey is going to be on the Men in Blazers show. I believe that's, so this show's supposed to come out on January 22nd. So if you're listening to this the day it comes out, then it's today. So Wednesday he's going to be on Men in Blazers. And I've seen screen caps of it, and he's wearing, of course, an Austin FC shirt. So that should be fun to watch. And as always, be sure to go onto your favorite podcasting app, website, whatever, however you listen to us. Give us a rating, a review, and subscribe to us. Like I said last episode, that's going to go a long way in helping new people find the show and find Austin Anthem going forward. So that would be a huge help. That's it for today. We'll be back in a few weeks with a new episode. And until then, enjoy your soccer.